Just as by way of getting started, what I'm talking about this morning is this organisms that we call livestock-associated MRSA. How many of you, other than Jennifer and Gail, who I know are familiar with it, have heard much about this? How many of you heard a little bit about it? How many of you have not heard about it at all? Okay, everyone's heard a little bit about it. And you'll know this is a group of organisms that we first became aware of about 8 years ago. And any time we identify pathogens in an animal reservoir, and particularly a food animal reservoir, there's a lot of angst about, okay, what does this mean? Is this something new coming to get us, going to sweep through in Western civilization? You do get a lot of doomsday scenarios. How do we define and how do we come to terms with how big a hazard it is? So we like animal analogies in veterinary science. So this is how I see this discussion. Okay, we have this phenomenon. It's a new hazard for us. Is it a big problem, a small problem, or is it a tiger or is it a pussycat? And I will just walk you through my appreciation of what we've learned about it and where it might be. Financial disclosures. I do wish to disclose the National Pork Board and Jennifer, who works for them, approached me about doing a review of the information that's known about these organisms and their relationship to animal and human disease. And that's essentially what I'm presenting to you this morning is the work that I did for them on that basis. Okay. Biology is a moving target, and if you ask people 20 years ago about MRSA, what was the truth about MRSA, it was a problem of chronically ill people, largely in hospitals, healthcare institutions, old aged care homes. There was a problem of often multiple antimicrobial resistance, and everyone thought, well, that's a problem because of the antimicrobial use in those reservoirs. Wasn't something that the citizen in the street had to be concerned about because it was really confined to the hospital community, and there was no epidemiological role for animal reservoirs. Just wasn't part of the conversation. Biology is a wonderful thing. It's good for job security. It changes. In the 1990s, we had emergence globally of a whole new range of variants of MRSA that were characterised by spread in the general community, and most of you will be aware of that. And in 2004, roundabouts, we had the first detection or emergence, whatever it was, of these organisms that we call livestock-associated MRSA. And, of course, that's reopened the whole debate and concern about, are animal reservoirs now important for the epidemiology of MRSA? Just going back to where that came from, the little girl at the top there was the original case. She had a congenital heart defect, was going in for open heart surgery at 6 months old. Before they, in Holland, they screen everyone going in for major surgery, and they found that she had MRSA and found that it was an unusual variant of MRSA. And they then found that there were two other cases that had the same variant, and all were linked to pigs. And you can see her there 10 years later working on her parents' pig farm. So it was none of these people had infections. They were detected in the screening process. What made these things characteristic was first is that they couldn't be typed with pulse field gel electrophoresis, the standard method they used in many places, CDC and Holland. They use the same enzyme, and it wouldn't. We see nice bar patterns there as example. The DNA couldn't be digested with that enzyme, so it was saying that was unusual. Another subtyping method that's used wisely with Staph aureus is multi-locus sequence typing, and they found these organisms were a new variant that was sequence type that hadn't been seen before in their database, and they christened it with the number of sequence type 398. And there's another subtyping method that's more discriminatory within that involves typing one particular gene that's unique to Staph aureus, and they found that within this family of ST398, if we call them that, MRSA, there was some variation. A number of different SPAR types that are given these numbers in one system that start with T. So T034, T, and there's lots of them. So when we're talking about livestock-associated MRSA, particularly originally and in the European context, we're talking about these untypable isolates that are ST398 and one of a number of SPAR types. Generally accepted what I'll call facts for the moment, given that the truth is a moving object, that it was seen when people looked that these were reasonably widespread in livestock populations, including pigs, cattle, avian species and horses, and also that they were occurring in lots of countries, including Canada and the USA. So when people started to turn over the rock and look for them, we found that they were there, and we're not sure how long they had been there for. The other thing that's very concerning was that colonisation of MRSA, so nasal carriage, was highly prevalent in people with occupational exposure to those reservoirs, particularly farmers, veterinarians and slaughter plant workers. And if you look at some of the prevalence rates commonly, I mean, there's examples where they go higher. It's a many-fold increase in prevalence of nasal carriage for occupationally exposed people. Most of that increase is explained by these livestock-associated variants. And the other part is that there appears to be very low risk of exposure in groups that don't have livestock exposure. Okay, so most people are reasonably happy with that as the state of play. What I did in trying to address this was trying to find every publication that I could that reported on ST398 Staph aureus in relation to clinical disease. There's lots more papers that say we swabbed people and we found it, but I was really trying to understand, okay, we know that, we know it's out there, we know a lot of people will carry it if you swab them, what's the issue with clinical disease? Particularly in Europe, because of their approach to controlling Staph aureus, many of the reports don't distinguish cases of infection from cases of colonisation. So in Holland, they will call a case of MRSA someone who's culture positive, not necessarily someone who's clinically infected. And that makes it a little harder to work through the data and understand what's going on with clinical disease. There are certainly a number of reports, relatively small number, of serious infections. So it did show that these organisms can be associated with serious clinical disease, and essentially all of those have been out of Europe. In North America, there's been a couple of attempts to try and look at what's there. First, a study by Golding, published from Canada, and they looked retrospectively at MRSA isolates from clinical disease in Canada and found five cases out of nearly 4,000 isolates, so a very low prevalence of these isolates. Four of them were skin and soft tissue infections, so not necessarily of great clinical significance. The other one was unspecified. So that was what was there in Canada. I'm not sure if this has changed in the last few months, but the CDC has gone back and looking for non-typable isolates, and it examined at more than 12,000 and hadn't found a case. So certainly what the surveillance systems, it's not meaning to say there aren't infections that aren't happening and aren't being captured by the surveillance systems, which are biased towards urban areas and other things, but so far it's not really moved the radar. It's not really on the radar in terms of human diseases in the US. Okay, so what I did in putting this together was look at reports that had both MRSA and methicillin susceptible. So I was interested in ST398, not necessarily just the MRSA because it's a much shorter list. Looked at the country and year of publication, the number of isolates and the ones that were screening or from clinical infections, where that was possible. Tried to describe or put together the cases by clinical presentation such as bacteremia, pneumonia, skin soft tissue infection, where that information was available. Try and classify them as invasive cases or not. And to do that, I was extremely conservative in basically anything that wasn't a wound infection or a skin soft tissue infection, I classified as invasive, including things that were urine cultures, which may not necessarily be invasive, and also sputum tests, because they're often used when people are looking at pneumonia. So basically anything that could vaguely have been invasive got put into that box, looked at fatalities, and also history of livestock exposure when that was there. So putting all that together, there was I found about 2,500 cases, and you can see about 2,000 of them were screening isolates. So the vast number of isolates and reports were screening, not clinical. We had about 500 clinical cases. Of them, 203 were unspecified. I mean, okay, it was a clinical isolate, but we've got no idea whether it was someone with a bacteremia or someone with a pimple on their finger. No idea of knowing the significance. There were 125 what were termed invasive cases, 5 fatal cases. So this is, again, what we can find over 8 years in the literature. The spectrum of clinical presentations is shown there. More than half skin and soft tissue infections. Second most common was bacteremic cases. then pneumonia, and then the rest, a whole sort of what in Australia we call a dog's breakfast, a whole variant of things, which are very typical of what you would see with staph aureus infections. So the majority of specified infections were skin and soft tissue infections, and that's not unusual. One thing, and I'll come back to this at length, when we looked at the invasive cases, a large proportion of them were MSSA and not MRSA. Remember, we've got them both in here together. And when we looked at the invasive cases and who had a history of livestock exposure, well, for the vast majority, we didn't know because it wasn't reported or recorded, but there was about 10% of cases where there was some record of livestock exposure, regardless of, we don't really know what that means, and 26% where it was reported that they'd had no livestock exposure. So again, in invasive cases, a very inconsistent pattern, or not unclear pattern, of the involvement of livestock exposure. Want to point out one of these, a couple of the bigger studies, or particularly this one, which was a retrospective study of looking at staph aureus in invasive infections, so ones that would be deemed as clinically important in Europe, and it was data from 350 or so laboratories in 450 hospitals, 26 countries. The map shows this is the area where, in most of these countries, particularly Holland, Spain, Germany, Italy, that was known that we have a high proportion of livestock-associated MRSA in the animal reservoirs. So it was where things are happening. They reviewed or identified 2,890 isolates from invasive infections. Among them, they only found the ST398 on 12 occasions, or 1.3% of their invasive cases. I think the interesting thing, when we get into the spar types, a variant of these spar types, these are sort of like the subfamilies of the ST398. I highlight one there, T571, because we'll come to see in a minute that it's a very interesting variant, and one that's, I think, going to change the conversation a little bit about understanding these organisms. None of these harboured the MECA-GEAM, meaning they're all MSSA. So in this study of multiple countries and large numbers of isolates, invasive disease, there were no cases of livestock-associated MRSA, but there were cases of ST398 MSSA in just 12 occasions. So again, a very small slice of the pie chart in terms of invasive disease in Europe in these countries where we know the organism's prevalent. A little bit more recent data, the Danes are a great, Denmark has the highest ratio of pigs to people in the world. They're a major pig exporting country. They also have nowadays obligatory notification of MRSA cases, and they publish a report every year, and I just want to go through these. You can see that in 2009 they reported that they had a reasonable proportion of their slaughter pigs positive for ST398 MRSA. When they looked at their human bacteremia cases, they had 10 in the year, small proportion, all MSSA. 2010, 2011, essentially the picture not changing, still fairly prevalent in their pig population, but in its invasive cases, no MRSA cases, and a small proportion of ST398 MSSA. Okay, so this is, I think, probably the best thing we've got to go with in terms of in countries with a large pig density, where these organisms are prevalent, and what's spilling over into the human health profile. There's been 5 reported ST398 infections. Again, the interesting thing here is 4 of these cases have been MSSA and not MRSA. I think there's a mentality there that, oh, if it's MRSA, you drop dead, and if it's MSSA, you walk away. I think that it's a very a gross oversimplification of the relative risks of those organisms. And we can see, again, all 4 of these were this particular type T571, which has been reported in pigs, and in fact I found it in pigs in the USA, but it is not common. It's one of the less frequent variants of ST398 that you'll find in pigs in all places where we've looked so far, and none of these cases had any significant livestock contact. So that opens a whole a pattern of questions. We have had one livestock MRSA fatality, which has occurred in Spain. This was from a spar type that is common in swine, particularly in Holland and Spain. But the person involved was an 85-year-old man with lung carcinoma, and chronic pulmonary disease, and the organism was isolated from his pleural fluid. So in terms of it being a primary agent in terms of the demise of the person, certainly it was he died with it. A little bit difficult in a multifactorial situation like that to attribute causality. That, so far, of what I'm aware, has been the case of fatalities. And it seems that we too tend to have this problem of potentially a higher burden from MSSA variants of ST398 than MRSA, and certainly a very irregular presence of livestock involvement and direct contact. Some other aspects, when there's been a couple of studies trying to understand transmissibility, two Dutch studies in very detailed studies in hospitals have found that the human variants of MRSA that are commonly in the human population are four times more transmissible, looking at secondary cases in hospital environments. So both studies have pretty much reported the same thing. There's been no real outbreaks of clinical disease associated with this organism, and they appear to be less transmissible in the hospital environment from human to human, and probably not surprising if we're talking about largely animal-adapted variants. Current evidence indicates low virulence relative to standard human virus. There's been significantly less cases of invasive disease. So if, amongst the reported clinical cases, another report I haven't got the detail to go to, and they showed they're about maybe 10 times less likely to be involved in invasive disease versus non-invasive disease. Essential lack of reported fatalities over 8 years with livestock-associated MRSA variants. And the interesting thing, even though we know in many countries there's a very high exposure risk in people who are occupationally exposed, as yet there's very few, almost no reports other than infected bite wounds of a significant infection risk and clinical disease risk in occupationally exposed people. So they have a high exposure level. So far, we're seeing remarkably few reports of clinical infections in that occupationally exposed group. The other thing is there's quite a number of genomic studies now looking at ST398, and pretty consistently they've shown that they've got few of the known important virulence factors that are in Staph aureus. And there's also reports of variants in cattle and poultry that appear to have human origin cross species, and part of that adaptation is involved loss of virulence factors. So we're still, there's a lot of interesting biology to be uncovered in this yet. I now want to move on because there's been a couple of recent studies, one from France here, where they looked at unusual bloodstream infections associated with what they call pig-borne-like Staph aureus 398. And again, they were looking specifically at these T571 MSA variants from bloodstream infections in France. As I mentioned before, this variant is relatively rare in pig isolates. And what they saw, again, genomically, was that these 30 isolates differed genetically from the pig-borne strains. They had similarities with isolates that have been obtained from humans in China and appeared to be different. So this variant is relatively common among human cases without nine livestock contact. So the thing here, question, not all ST398 are equal. I'll just go quickly through these because there's several other reports from populations in New York, in Holland, China, and in Colombia, where these ST571 have been reported. In all cases, no apparent livestock contact. In the publications I reviewed, 30% of the bacteremia cases in those publications were actually caused by T571 variant of ST398. Closer to home, this year there's a study reported in a community-based study in New York City, North Manhattan, and they looked at non-invasive MSSA isolates, bloodstream MSSA isolates, and outpatient MRSA isolates. They found no ST398 in the outpatient MRSA cases, so there are community-associated cases. They found, again, our friend T571 in 5% of non-invasive MSSA and 2.5% of MSSA bacteremias. They did a lot of interesting things. I'd refer people to this paper if they really want to dig into this. They concluded this is a readily transmissible variant and clinically important that differs significantly at the genome level from its livestock-associated counterpart. So understanding of these things is still unfolding. I'd say it's embryonic. We've had some naive perceptions. First of all MRSA found in livestock are ST398. In China, in Asia, that's not the case. They tend to be more often ST9, and we've got different variants reported in North America as well. So that was an oversimplification. The fact that livestock are the only reservoirs of ST398, we're now learning, I think, is an oversimplification. There is diverse epidemiology among ST398 variants. I think we need more systematic research of S. aureus in animals and humans. In fact, I'm involved in some of that myself at the moment. I think the livestock-associated ST398 is still an occupational health concern we need to learn about. I think there are variants that are not associated with livestock to this point in time appear to have a larger public health concern, though still very small in the overall picture of MRSA. And that is my time.
Okay. Let me hold the questions until the very end.